Hi, it's great to have you with us. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart.
And I'm Justine Toe.
Last time on Life and Faith, we heard part one of our interview with Cameron Watt. Cameron was sentenced in 2004 to 2.5 years in prison for white-collar crime. He was a country boy. He'd never even had a speeding fine up until that point. And he told us a little bit about what had happened in terms of getting caught and then the terrible drawn-out process of getting sent to prison, leaving his wife and young children behind. Today we pick up the story and hear more about the way Cameron's faith influenced him and those around him while he was in prison.
Cameron, last time you were telling us about the ways that you'd built up connections with other inmates and how they would come and ask you to pray for them. Can you tell us about the work of Kairos? That's a Christian ministry that visits jails and speaks to inmates. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, Kairos is a fantastic organisation, and I think it universally amongst the inmates has this great acceptance, even if some of the guys just come in for the free food. But a lot of times, you know, guys in jails, you know, I met many men in jail that had been in there for decades who'd never had one visitor come and see them. And I just can't imagine that sort of loneliness and sadness. And they would come along to a Kairos program, whether they were a believer or not, or whether they had nothing to do with, you know, my faith of Christianity. They had these people coming in and accepting them, sharing just life with them and being able to embrace them, maybe not physically, but embrace them and saying that they weren't rejected by everyone. And these people just showed such great love for all of these men that came along to these meetings weekly and monthly and yearly. So it was amazing.
People tend to be quite cynical about you know, people becoming a Christian in jail. Is there a reason for that cynicism, or do we need to kind of give people the benefit of the doubt?
Oh, wow. I know that, and I've heard it plenty of times, that, you know, they can't believe that these men can become believers in jail, and it's just, you know, for the weak, and they, you know, they need a crutch to lean on and all of that sort of stuff. And, you know, I watched men who were literally multiple murderers become just gentle men and changed completely their whole outlook on life. They used to be psychotic, crazy men who all of a sudden are these gentle, well-spoken men who in their right mind now want to change their life. Whether or not they will ever see the outside of the bars, they are wanting to change their life. They don't want to live that way anymore. They really do take on board the fact that this can change their whole being. They don't have to be this way anymore. And sadly, I don't think there's anything else in jail that offers them a way to change this. A lot of the programs in jail, outside of things like Kairos, don't really deal with the heart of the matter of why people are like they are. And what it tries to do is it just tries to deal with the surface level thing. So I no disrespect to these programs, but might run a drugs course to change their mindset about drugs, but it doesn't deal with the fact of, well, what in their life and their heart says that's a good life and that's what I want to follow through with. And so Kairos is a program that changes that mentality and goes, no, let's really look at what is, as I was saying when I was going to jail, what's important in life? What's the really good things? Let's try and deal with the issues that you've dealt with all your life, this rejection, this heartache, this pain, this thing that inside of you has said a criminal life is a life that's worth living, to changing it to something that there's so much more than this. And so I love that about Kairos program, that it actually sees men change completely.
Cameron, let's just keep talking about that actual experience of jail. Now, you've talked about a close encounter with members of a feared bikie gang. You told me about, I keep saying you told me this. I should say that Cameron's story features in a book I wrote a few years ago called Bright Lights, Dark Nights. It was great to get that story into that book. So Cameron, these bikies came up to you after you'd done this big Christian talk, right? And you had fears that this might not be a friendly visit.
Yeah, I gave this talk at what was called an invite night at Kairos. And at an invite night, anyone from the jail, even if they've never done the program, can come along, just experience what a normal Kairos weekly night is. And I thought I'd done so well. I really did. I thought, yeah, this is excellent. I've spoken really well. The guys really responded well. They were listening. They were quiet. They weren't, you know, trying to get out of there and just go and have free coffee or whatever. They were really listening in. So I was really keen to call my wife after I'd finished this talk, when we went back to the wings of the jail. And I was waiting in line for the phone. And yes, a president of a very large bikie gang and his sergeant at arms both came up and stood beside me. And as they stood beside me, I can literally remember thinking, I'm not going to die, they will hit me, but the guard station is so close that the guards will see it happen, they'll charge in, they'll tackle them, and I will just be hurt. So he came up and he asked just some of the questions about what I'd presented that night. He wasn't sure about Christianity, but he was interested to talk more about it. And then after he realised that I was genuine in what I'd been saying, he said, "You know, Cameron, if you ever get in trouble, just come and tell me about it, and then I want you to forget about it." Now, I didn't know how to respond to him because it was I'm just not used to that sort of lifestyle. But I said, thank you for the offer, and I'm really, you know, feel privileged that you would say that to me. But, you know, as a Christian, I can't really accept that sort of protection. But thank you, you know, I really understand that's a big thing to be offered that. We became fairly good friends, actually, and indeed my wife and his wife spoke a lot in the visit centre and on the outside. And on one occasion, they invited me to have dinner and they yelled out to me, come over here, Camo, and have dinner with us. So I just started to eat, and this ex-president stood up and he said, stop, Camo hasn't said grace yet. And I really felt privileged that a guy that had nothing to do with the church, in fact had hated the church for so many years, considered me a friend, involved me in a lot of things that he did. He shared a lot of the pain that he was going through. I even prayed for him a number of times.
And I bet you're a bit more relaxed around the exercise yard after that.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Life and Faith. We're talking with Cameron Watt about his time in prison.
This experience of mixing in with these people who, I'm presuming most of them, had very, very different life experiences to you. Mm. That must have been an extraordinary thing, probably daunting, but you look back on that fondly.
Yeah, it's funny because I really think there were touch points where I seemed to just meet with people that I wouldn't normally. It was good that I was a good sportsman when I was young, because the guys that liked to play football, I played football really well, so they wanted me to be in with them. I was fairly tall, so I played basketball, you know, with the head of another community within the jail, and he really, you know, appreciated me in that. And you know, worked out, so all the guys that were working out, I got to know them. The guys that were intellectuals, not that there were a whole lot of those, but the ones that were intellectuals in jail because of my past of being in an intellectual sort of career, I got to know them very well. I'm a chef, so I got to know all the people that like doing cooking, and because I loved gardening, because my dad inspired that into me over life. You know, the people that did that sort of stuff, I seemed to get in with them.
So good preparation for jails to have a broad range of interests.
Absolutely. And if you've got a broad range of interests, you'll be friends with everyone. No.
The whole experience of what you've been talking about is, like, what do you take away from that? That God can take bad situations and bring good out of them, even in surprising ways.
Yeah, it's funny because when I first went to jail, there's this Bible verse that says, all things work together for good for those who love the Lord and are called according to his purpose. And lots of well-meaning Christians like to send me that verse. And when I started to go through this process, I just sat there going, no, there's nothing good can come from this. This is just, I really think God has got it wrong, that this is something that can work out for good. And it was such a surreal experience to, you know, think that maybe God can only control parts of the life and parts of my world. You know, God's really not interested in the little bitty things, because if he was really interested in the little bitty things, surely he wouldn't have sent me to jail, and surely he would have had me stay with my wife. And even now as I look back, I sort of go, you know what, God, I wish there was a way that I could have learnt all of those things without having to go to jail, but I don't think I would have. And on the outside of jail, I would never, ever, ever in a million years had associated with these men. And so it's certainly a situation where you go, why would you put me in that situation, God? But now looking back, I just look at it and go, wow, man, there were so many ways that every time I sat there thinking, you know, God's just missed it, or he doesn't care for me, he doesn't love me, I could see little ways where he just involved himself in that really changed my perspective on what life was all about and what was important to me. And I do thank God that I went to jail now. You know, it's a strange feeling to have, to be going, thankful for 2.5 years in jail, that was awesome. But I definitely live that out now. It wouldn't have moved me into the career that I'm in now, and it certainly has changed what I think is important.
So Cameron, eventually the doors open and you're out, and you've taken this path now. You're now working in a church. Why did you go in that direction? This has been an unusual career path, let's be honest.
Yeah, look, part of the thing that I noticed in jail, a lot of young offenders were coming in at 18, 19, and they thought that they were very strong and tough, and this was a great thing. You know, they were heroic almost in doing this stuff. And I just realised this has got to have been ingrained in their life. They can't have just thought of this at 18 or 19, to go and commit a criminal act is a good thing. They've had this in their life which has said it's okay to be violent, or it's okay to do whatever it is they do. And I thought, you know what, I really want to be involved in stopping that. And I really want to be involved using my experience to really speak into kids' lives and say, you know, this is not good. And sadly, it's just becoming so acceptable and normal. It's not even a, you know, a weekly thing we hear on the news. It's every day we hear of violence, not just in schools, just on the streets, and these one-hit punches and everything. Where our society has changed so much in its fabric and in its value. I quite often say it to kids in schools. We have this PlayStation mentality of life that, you know, when you die in a game in PlayStation or Xbox or any of them, you're just going to respawn. And it's okay, because if you waste a bit of this life, it doesn't matter. And I really try and impress upon them that, you know, once you've had those 80 or 90 trips around the sun, that's it. You don't get to do it again. You don't get to respawn. You don't do any of that. And if you waste a big percentage of your life following things that may not even lead you to illegal actions, but lead you to a life that you look back when you know, my age now, and you think, oh, I wasted all my life, all of my energy as a young man or as a young woman, following dreams and things that are just worthless. I really wanted to be involved in that process of saying, you know, when you're starting to make these decisions as a youth or a young adult, be very careful. Be very careful in what you're doing. And yes, for me, from a perspective as a Christian, I go, well, there is a much better answer than following worldly desires. I say that a life following the example of Jesus is a much better life. But just for even for the non-Christian child, just a life where you actually think about what it is you're living for and make changes in that regard for long-term life, that's one that you don't just despair over when you're older.
Well, Cameron, it's an extraordinary story. It's so good to have you in to talk about it. And I'm sure you've got enormous amounts to contribute in the work that you're doing now. And, of course, your family would be so glad that you're around as well. So thanks so much for coming in, mate.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. For more on Christianity and modern life, go to publicchristianity.org. Thanks for your company. See you next time.